court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia.
Perspective on legal frivolity. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.
Well, we're in football season and my voice feels a little hoarse.
Were you yelling at the TV yesterday? You didn't go to any live games.
Well, I mean, there was an occasional outburst, I think, watching the herd yesterday. But for the most part, no, I wasn't even yelling at the TV. I don't know if this is this daggum weather and changing the seasons. Sound like a crotchety old man here.
Well, I had me a full-fledged footballgasm yesterday. Mary and Riley were out of town. They're doing the live shows. They were on a tour with the boys. My Bim Bam was touring, and Still Buffering was opening for them in New York Friday night to a sold-out club there. The show went real good. Lin-Manuel sang the boys' opening theme song for them, so he was there to liven the crowd up. And
it's awesome. I mean, he wore a shirt Charlie made too, right?
Yeah. Judge that. John Hodgman was there. So they had a really successful Friday night, and then they traveled to DC on Saturday and did the show there Saturday with Sawbones opening for my Bim Bam. So now they're flying home today. Well, this is Sunday morning we're recording, and the boys are still, they're on their way to Boston because they're doing a Boston show tonight with Schmanners opening for them there with Travis and Teresa. So
tour of the Northeast.
Yeah. All sold out shows.
So you had the house all to yourself, huh?
Yeah. So I got to watch football all day long yesterday. I started at noon and just continued right on through after midnight.
Watching the West Coast games.
Yeah, whatever. Although I couldn't stand those Arizona uniforms. Those are the worst looking uniforms I've ever seen.
Oh, I didn't see them.
Oh, they were awful. I mean, you couldn't even, a science fiction movie is what they look like or something. They're awful looking. If I was a recruit, I wouldn't go there just because of their uniforms.
Well, I saw that Marshall had new uniforms too yesterday, it looked like.
Yeah, they've added black to their color scheme.
Like, they didn't look like normal pants. They looked like shorts.
Well, that's the way a lot of the guys wear them, although I don't know why with the way knee injuries are these days, but they wear them pulled up above their knees. Now, yeah. In the NFL, you can't do that, but yeah. In college, they don't say anything about it. I guess they figure it makes them faster.
Yeah. Well, they want to show off their kneecaps.
Yeah, that's what the girls like to see is the guy's kneecaps.
See that guy's kneecaps? Woo-wee!
That's some set of kneecaps.
Well, today's episode is not about kneecaps. It's about repossession. And this was a topic which was suggested by Ben Harrison. And he said he was actually watching a TV show where a guy jumped a fence at an airfield, broke into a locked hangar, and repossessed an airplane. And the funny thing is, when I read that, I was like, you know, I think I've actually seen this TV show before. And I Googled it, and there was a TV show called Airplane Repo on Discovery Channel. It's actually a TV show.
That's what they do each week is repossess airplanes?
Yeah.
I've never heard of that.
Yeah, I did Google it. I did a little background. I think there were some complaints that it was actually not actually true, that a lot of this was kind of fictionalized.
I think a lot of these reality shows are not actually true. I think a lot of them are fictionalized.
Yeah. Well, there was another one, too. It was called Operation Repo. I remember seeing that one on True TV. They had a lot of very fictionalized type things, repossessing cars.
Yeah, well. I remember. Repo Wars. Wasn't that one of them, Repo Wars? And they had some guy named Bubba that was a big old guy that was one of the ones, and they would see who could repossess the most cars or something. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, there's all kinds of these shows out there. Yeah. They're entertaining characters.
They are, but you know a lot of that's set up.
It is.
And it's. I guess we tend to believe all these reality TV shows, but they create those circumstances. I mean, it's like whether it's on Bachelor or Survivor or whatever it is, I think they tell people, now go ahead and do this. Be the bad guy. There's always the bad guy or the bad girl.
The heel?
Or whatever. Yeah, and cast yourself as a villain. Think of all the publicity you'll get. And people do it just so they can be on TV.
Well, and also, this is a good topic because there's somebody in this room that has actually worked as a repo man before.
You're right. I was a repo man at one time.
And you were working for a bank, right?
Right. Yeah. The banks are, I think, a little more reputable in their repos than some of these repo companies are.
Yeah.
But we did deal with some of the repo companies and gaining stuff back.
Yeah. That was the bank that was on 4th Avenue and 11th Street that had the big escalators. Is that right?
Yep. Right in the front. Yeah. It's now the RCBI, Robert C. Byrd, something or another, where they do manufacturing development things.
Yeah. They also, it's pretty cool. They do 3D printing there and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. I went to a meetup there last month on Raspberry Pis. So
Raspberry Pis?
Yeah. The little microcomputers are about the same size as a credit card.
Oh, I thought you meant snacks.
Nope.
Oh, they're not edible, huh?
No, they're not edible.
I like little lemon pies. I get those on my cheat day now.
Those are good.
I love those little lemon pies. But yeah, that was the old Huntington Trust and Savings Bank. And the branch was right across the street. The drive-through was right across the street.
That's Applebee's now?
Yeah.
Or Charles Schwab.
Yeah, Charles Schwab is actually there in the old building.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, one other thing that reminded me of, there was a cult movie called Repo Man.
Well, I was going to talk about that. Yeah, that's a gem in the cinema.
That was a great movie.
Oh, yeah.
And it's one of those cult ones. You know, it didn't do great when it first came out, but it just built this following. But it is a hilarious movie.
I watched it probably about 8 or 9 months ago. I saw it was on Netflix or HBO Now or something like that, and I was at work. And I put it on one of my monitors, and I was sitting there just working on something, and I just kind of halfway watched it again.
I've got to watch that again. That was a great movie. I haven't seen it in a while.
It's outstanding.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny how movies like that will catch on, that they're not really any kind of big hit at the time they come out, but somehow they build a groundswell.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of like Rocky Horror. When Rocky Horror first came out, it wasn't a big hit or anything, but look at it now. It's like revered.
Or the movie The Room.
Yeah, that's so good because it's bad.
Yeah. So that's basically repossession in the media, but we're going to talk a bit more about like what actually is repossession.
Real
life repo stories.
From the streets.
Maybe we need to have our own repo show.
Well, that would be pretty fun.
I could be like the wisecracking sidekick who's a lawyer by day but repo man by night.
I don't think you want to do that. And I'll tell you what, I was a young, aggressive, ruthless guy in those days. I couldn't do that anymore. I really couldn't. That's not me. I couldn't go around and do it. I mean, whether you really have the right to people's stuff or not, that's fine. But I just couldn't do that anymore. At the time, I kind of enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And my boss had to hold me back because I enjoyed it a little too much. So he didn't like that. Although he said, I got to tell you, the collections are at the lowest point as far as outstanding. Our outstanding collections are at the lowest point they've ever been in the time I've been at the bank since you've taken over as collection manager.
that Tommy Smurl, he's a real go-getter.
Yeah, I was. I'd go and get him.
That guy's a true a-hole. Yeah,
that's what it takes. But they hired me as a teller, and I worked as a teller for my first couple of years so I could finish up school, because I got married halfway through school. Mm-hmm. And, of course, getting married kind of messes up because you got to get a job and stuff, so it kind of messes up being able to go work. You know, or being getting married messes up going to school. So I had to get a job where I could go to school around my hours, so that lent me the possibility to go early in the morning to classes, then go to work, and then go to classes after work.
Yeah.
So I was able to finish up. Took me six years to get through my 4-year degree, but I made it.
So you were working as a teller. Did somebody just come up to you and basically like, hey, you're a big dude. Why don't you go out here and go get this car?
Well, no, they had asked me to help from time to time. They had some things over there, and the guy that was the collection manager was kind of a mild-mannered guy. Mm-hmm. He didn't like confrontation.
Oh, I think being a repo man and not liking confrontation is probably not a good mix.
Yeah, so they had observed the way I was, so they said, maybe we can put this to good use. So they had me help out a few times. So when this guy got moved up to a supervisory position, they gave me kind of a trial as a collection manager. And when I started bringing accounts in, they said, you want that job full time? I said, sure. Now, it still wasn't much money. I mean, I was working as a teller 60 hours a week, making $10,000 a year.
Oh, my gosh.
So they gave me the job as collection manager. It did cut back on my hours because I didn't have to work Saturdays anymore. Mm-hmm. So it cut back on my hours, but I was still only making like $11,000 a year. So.
Yeah. A little bit better.
Yeah, a little bit better. Not much. I wish I'd have gotten a percentage of what I brought in. That would have been good.
Yeah, I mean, that would give you, if you whenever you have a stake in the game, it makes you a bit more zealous about it.
That's right. But I did it anyway. To me, it was the competition.
Yeah.
And it was competition with myself. It's not like I was competing against my house. I was the only collection manager.
Yeah.
But I wanted to get those accounts as low as possible, our outstanding collectibles and everything there. And there were ones that had been sitting there, kind of like unsolved murders. They had been sitting there cold cases for a while, and I'd grab those. And when I wasn't working on something immediate, I'd start working on these cold cases, cars that were out there that had been in default.
The white whale.
Trying to track them down. Yeah. And there were ones that I learned where their relatives were, and I'd go and I'd circle their relative's house once a month or something like that, just to see if they might be in town visiting or something.
That's funny. Well, Wikipedia actually has a really good kind of definition or synopsis of what repossession is. And it says, repossession is a term used to describe when an actual owner takes back from the borrower an object that was rented or leased or was borrowed, either with or without compensation, or when a lien holder takes possession of an item from its registered owner that was used as collateral for a loan. So that's kind of like what repossession is in a nutshell, if you're not familiar with the term. And basically, it's kind of like a legal self-help type action where you basically are able to go and take the property yourself without having to use like a court of law or have an order from the court directing the sheriff to take it back for you or something along that. It just kind of is a cost saving measure for a lot of things. And it's used a lot mainly for vehicles is one of the main ones that you see it in, but it can be used for other things as well. But it's just for items that are generally not as not as expensive, like a house. Like you can't self-help, a house to take it back.
Well, you can't take it back, but you can foreclose.
Right, but that requires you to use the court system and things like that. So
right.
Basically, repossession is kind of a similar type thing, but it's like self-help where you don't need these extra steps. It's already written into the contract that you have the ability to do that.
Yeah, I remember when I first learned as a kid about mortgages and how they work, because I just assumed we live in this house. We own it, right, Dad? Well, not exactly. The bank owns it. I said, what do you mean the bank owns it? Well, they own it. We just get to live here as long as we pay them money. I said, well, don't we owe any of it? Don't we own any of it? And he said, well, yeah, we own some of it. I said, like how much? He goes, the back two bedrooms.
So he's giving you a little education in equity.
And I was a nervous wreck after that. I'm like, what if they take everything but the back two bedrooms? What are we going to do?
You put all your stuff in the back two bedrooms.
Yeah. Well, can't we keep the kitchen or a bathroom? What are we going to do?
We're going to need that.
So I was too young to have heard that because I didn't fully able to register what that meant exactly. But but yeah, because with a car, the bank actually owns the title. The car is titled in the bank's name.
Yes.
So it is their car. And they basically, you sign a contract with them that says, we allow you to drive our car as long as you send us this much money a month.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it's actually titled in the person's name, but there is on the title itself, it says that the
bank has a lien.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and that lien takes priority over the ownership of the car.
Right. And that puts people on notice that, if you try to sell it, like you can't sell it because there's a lien on it and things like that.
Well, you don't have a title. The bank actually maintains that title.
That's right. They keep it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's there. You don't have a title to sell it.
Right. You can get a title though to go get it registered and things like that though, I believe, can't you?
No, when you buy it, you get a title, and if you get the loan through the bank, you have to bring it to the bank and get it. I mean, it depends on where you buy it. You buy it from a new car dealership or something. They're going to take care of that for you, but the title is sent directly to the bank.
I've only bought one new car ever,
mm-hmm.
and it was back in 1995.
You don't remember how that worked?
No.
But when you go go ahead.
I've bought and sold a couple used cars since then, but there hasn't been any money owed on them. So.
Well, see, that's the difference. Now, if you got to finance it, though, you have to bring that title to the bank before mm-hmm. they'll give you a check for it.
Right.
And so then they're going to keep that, and they're going to get it registered with their lien on it.
Right. So you basically have to satisfy the amount that's owed before they release it, and then they'll give you a clear title, which you in turn sell to the person.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. They sign it over to you saying they release it, and then you have the option. You can just carry that around with the release, or you can actually go and submit to the DMV for a clean title.
Oh, okay.
But either way, you own it after that.
I want to get a bit more into like some other areas of repossession and what to do if you can't find the car and things like that. But before we get into that, I think there's actually a couple motions today.
Well, actually, there is. Could we approach the bench to pay court costs?
All right. Approach. Who's on the docket today?
Well, first on the docket is ZipRecruiter. That's why it's a Zocket.
Exactly.
It's ZipRecruiter. That's what got me going in that direction.
So if you're hiring, do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates?
ZipRecruiter?
Yes, it's ZipRecruiter.
I got it right.
You did.
Was that Legal Briefs?
It was not Legal Briefs, but you're starting. That was a bonus question. You're starting off.
I can always use a bonus.
Well, you get a bonus whenever you use ZipRecruiter because it basically makes the job of finding new talent very easy.
Well, that's good. With ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to 100-plus job sites with just one click. Then their powerful technology efficiently matches the right people to your job, better than anyone else can.
And that's why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them. In fact, 80% of employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through a site within one day. That's quick results.
That's barely 24 hours.
Yeah, I mean, I'll have to do the math on that, but I think you're right.
Well, it's somewhere in there, but the main thing is there's no juggling emails or calls to your office. You simply screen, rate, and manage candidates all in one place with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard.
So you can find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. And right now, our listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right. Yes, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/appoint.
That's ZipRecruiter.com/appoint. Now, one more time to try it for free. That's right. Free, Michael.
You can't beat free.
You can't beat free. You can't go lower than free. They're not going to pay you to do it. You have to at least be free.
It's free, and you get results in one day. So what else can you want?
You can't want any more. So go to ZipRecruiter.com/appoint. Now, you know who's next, Mike?
Well, I do, but that's because I have the list in front of me.
Oh, well, then I guess it's not a surprise.
Who's next, Tommy?
It's our old buddies from DollarShaveClub.com.
I love DollarShaveClub.com.
I do too, and they've treated us to some of their new packets here recently.
They have
quite a few other products besides their main product of an outstanding razor and razor blades.
That's right. I mean, everybody knows that Dollar Shave Club you can get razors to shave with, but they don't know about the other products that they have, and they have pretty much everything you need in the bathroom: body wash, shampoo, hair gel, lip balm. And even a couple other things we're going to talk about here in a minute. They got everything.
Yeah. I mean, besides their razors, which are absolutely outstanding. And I have to say, came back from the beach there a week ago.
Mm-hmm.
And when I'm at the beach, sometimes I don't shave. I get that rough, you know, man of the sea type look there a little bit. So, you know, when you come back, you're a little bit scraggly, but it's not long enough where the electric razor will help. But it's so long that your regular razor usually tugs and pulls, and it's not a real pleasant shaving experience.
That's right.
Well, I got to say, I got back. I used the Dr. Carver Shave Butter and shaved. It was just like shaving the next day. I mean, shaving after one day's growth.
Yeah, they are great razors. I mean, they are outstanding. I can't go on enough about how quality the razors are. So,
That was the test right there.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that was about 5 days' growth, and it just went right through it. No tugging, no pulling, no cutting. It was an excellent shaving experience. Now, what about some of the others? We got that special packet, the Bleep Shower and Shave.
Yep. I don't know what that bleep stood for. But
well, it starts with an SH, and I think it's a familiar saying that several people have, but we're not going to say it on here. The Shoot Shower and Shave.
Oh, shoot. Yep, we had that. And what it had in it, which one of my favorite products was, he'll tell you what came in this box. It had the shave butter, the body wash, and one wipe Charlie's butt wipes.
Yep.
Now, you can guess which one of these was probably my favorite. The one wipe Charlie's one butt wipe. Charlie's.
I'm not sure that I like that they're named after my granddaughter.
No, but they're still it's a clever name. And what it is, if you've ever used a,
they're like a wet nap for your butt.
Yeah, a wet nap for your butt, and they leave you feeling very refreshed.
Yeah, you do the initial paperwork the old fashioned way.
Yep,
and with your final paperwork foray, You use the one wipe Charlie's and everything's clean to go.
That's right. This may be
no
like,
more embarrassing skid marks when you get undressed at night.
This may be the forerunner of the three shell system. I don't know. So it's really great. And I love the logo for the Charlie's butt wipes. It's number way to clean up after number two.
That's number one way
to clean up after number two. And that's on the Dollar Shave Club website. So, but right now, if you go to dollarshaveclub.com/court, you can try this free or not free. It's not totally free.
It's not completely free, but it might as well be. It
might as well be. It's $5 and you get the starter set. You get the executive razor and the three trial size versions of the shave butter, the body wash, and the one wipe Charlie's butt wipes.
You will also receive their executive razor, which includes their premium weighty handle and a full cassette of cartridges. After the first box, replacement cartridges are sent for only a few bucks a month.
And the only way you can get this offer is if you go to dollarshaveclub.com/court.
That's dollarshaveclub.com/court.
Dollar Shave Club's high-quality products will have you covered from face to cheeks to butt cheeks.
Face cheeks to butt cheeks.
What did I say?
Face to cheeks to butt cheeks. You got an extra two in there.
There's extra cheeks?
Near your... face cheeks to butt cheeks.
Face cheeks to butt cheeks.
There is no better time to try the club than now. And tell them Mike and Tommy sent you.
So, if you're trying to repossess a vehicle and you can't find it, there are other things you can do as well to try to reclaim the vehicle. And one of them is what's called replevin. And that's actually when you file a court action to get the goods brought back to you. And so that's something else too. The theory behind repossession, replevin, and all the different things we've talked about is basically that you have a security interest. The bank or whoever holds the loan has a security interest in that collateral. You're able to protect the money you lent them with that collateral. So that's called a security interest. So basically, as we said about like financing a car dealer, the bank, or whoever you finance it through, they maintain that security interest in the vehicle. And that way, if you do default on their loan, then that money that they loaned you for the vehicle or the property is actually secured by that property. So it's secured. One of the things that they'll do whenever you have loans like this, if you default, is basically they can do what's called acceleration. And if your contract you signed with them has a has an acceleration clause in it, then basically what they can do is they can make everything due right then and there. And really, when we're talking about these things, these different kinds of agreements, I mean, they are just contracts with different kinds of things. So it all comes back to contract law again.
But I wonder how many people actually read that contract, because you're signing that when you sign for the loan.
Yeah.
And I don't know if everybody always understands exactly what they're signing when they sign for the loan that can happen.
Oh, probably not. So to illustrate exactly what acceleration is, so say you buy a car and you're supposed to make $500 a month payments for the next 3 years. That's $18,000. And say you make payments for a year and then you miss that 13th one. And if there's an acceleration clause in it, then basically the person who owns the lien, they can accelerate the loan, demand $12,000, and also have the right to repossess the vehicle. So they can do both of those. Now, they're not necessarily entitled to collect $12,000 from you or things like that, but basically they'll say it's due right now. So, hey, if you pay this full $12,000 right now, we'll give you the car. Because once you've defaulted, they don't have to keep going on and let you get back on the payment plan, even though you've maybe paid almost the whole thing off.
It's saying they don't have to continue allowing you to not make your payments.
Exactly. And they don't have to allow you, they don't have to let you start making payments again either. They can just say it's all due, we're done with it, whatever. Which, you know, it makes sense, because if somebody's missed some payments and things like that, then you don't have to go through the hassle of trying to do this again. So
exactly.
You know, it's
and usually once somebody does that once, they fall back into it again, because there were a lot of cases where I'd have somebody several months behind and I have to work with them trying to get it caught up. They finally get it caught up and you think you're done with them. And next thing you know, they're back on your past due again 2 or 3 months later.
Yeah.
I mean, so it's usually a recurring thing.
Now, if they do repossess the vehicle, then the person who had their vehicle repossessed will generally not owe the full amount back to the lien holder. Now, right. There are some instances where there could be some claims where they might owe the bank or the lien holder some money. So I got a hypothetical here I'm going to ask you.
Okay.
If a bank repossesses a car, and let's say the person owes $10,000 on it, then the bank doesn't try to sell the car. They just let it sit outside. Actually, let's say it's a convertible, and they basically leave it outside with the top down for a whole year, and then try to sue the person for the full $10,000 since the car is worthless and destroyed. Do you think that seems fair?
No.
You're right.
No, that is not fair. I have experience in this. Now, I've got to go back to 80 to 81 to recall my experiences with this, but yeah. I actually know quite a bit about this.
Well, this whole theory as to why that is not allowed is because lien holders have a duty to mitigate their damages.
Exactly.
And what that basically means is that mitigation is the principle requiring the plaintiff after suffering an injury to use ordinary care to alleviate the effects of the injury. And if the defendant can show that the plaintiff failed to mitigate damages, the plaintiff's recovery can be reduced. It's kind of what's called an equitable defense. It's based on equity. So it's kind of like, it's not fair. So what are your experiences with mitigation?
Well, let me start from the beginning. Here's the first thing that I recall is that banks do not want to repossess your car.
Right.
They're in the business of lending money and collecting money back.
Not selling cars.
They do not want to sell cars. They don't want to handle the cars. It's a hassle for them. The other reason you don't want to repossess a car is, except for one time, every car I ever repossessed was a piece of crap by the time I got it back.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, and I know it's a broad generalization, but people that did not pay their bills did not take very good care of their cars.
Yeah.
You know, so you knew that it was going to be a losing battle. I mean, I went and got cars that were only a year old, and I wouldn't have given you a nickel for them. I mean, you know, they would have, they're running on all temporary tires. The engine is shot. The interior's torn up. The trunk lock is punched out, so it's just a hole back there. So anybody can get your trunk and it's tied shut. I mean, and these were cars that were relatively new.
Yeah.
So the bank is not wanting to repossess your car. Now, there was a process we had to go through. When a car, I think it had to be at least 30 days, if not 60 days past due, you had to send the owner a right to cure default, which was a registered letter that they had to sign and that they received. And then you kept that on file. And basically what that said is you are in default of your loan. You have 30 days to bring it up to date, or we will repossess your cars.
Yeah.
Now, I don't remember exact time frames on it, but I know it was in there. And we had to send them that letter before we could do anything.
That's generally called something called a right to cure.
Right. And that's what this one was, a right to cure default. Mm-hmm. I don't know. So we sent them that letter. So then after a certain period, after they received that letter, then you could legally go get the car. Mm-hmm. So they had notice. It's not like you didn't pay your bill and the bank might show up and grab your car.
Right.
You give them notice. And then at that point, you hope that the people would at least call you. And if people made half an effort to try to pay their bill or pay, can I make you a half a payment? Can I make this plan and do this until I can get caught up? Sure. Yeah, we'll do that. We'll work with you. So, I mean, that's what I'm advising people. I assume it's still the same, even though that was 30, almost 40 years ago, that, you know, they'll still work with you because they want the money. They don't want your car.
Yeah. It's the same thing too. When banks were, when the mortgage bubble popped and banks were foreclosing on all these houses. I mean, they're not in the business of owning houses.
Right.
You know, I mean, if they own 15, 20 houses, I mean, they got to take care of these houses. They got to, you know, till they sell them or something like that, they got to pay somebody to cut the grass, to maintain it, to make sure nothing happens.
Well, and not only that, what do you think's happening to all the values of these houses with this mortgage bubble bursting?
Yeah.
They're all dropping. Yeah. So you're taking these houses from people that you have financed for $200,000, and the houses are now worth $100,000. So it's not a winning game.
When I was researching this, I came across an interesting case from Delaware, and the case is called Credit Acceptance versus David Lauer, and it was January 12, 2017 case. I'm not really sure why this case popped up. I mean, I didn't really search Delaware cases too frequently, but it did pop up, and it was kind of a perfect example of what I wanted to illustrate with regards to mitigation and things like that. So basically what happened in this case was the defendant had co-signed a retail installment contract as one of two buyers for the purchase of a 2006 Nissan Altima, and pursuant to the contract, they were supposed to make monthly payments of $416 for 48 months. Contract also provided that the security interest in the vehicle was provided to the creditor, seller for the contract, and that in the event the default on the contract by the buyer, the creditor seller was entitled to repossess the vehicle and sell it to offset the balance still owed to it. The contract specifically stated that if the buyers defaulted, the creditor seller may take repossess the vehicle from buyers. Under the contract, the buyers were also liable to the creditor seller for any deficiency balance due to it after the sale of the vehicle. The contract entitled the creditor seller to recover reasonable attorney's fees incurred and the collection amounts due to it. And the rights were assigned to the plaintiffs immediately in the contract. So basically, somebody did this loan, then assigned to the plaintiffs, and that's how they ended up with it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the buyers defaulted on the contract, as you might have guessed, since we're having a court case about it.
Right. If they paid their bill, we wouldn't be talking about it.
The payment was not made, and the balance in the contract of $15,134 was due as of December 10th, 2012. The plaintiff did not repossess the vehicle in which they had a security interest when the buyers defaulted on the contract. But basically what they did is that it had been the understanding of the plaintiff that a garage keeper's lien sale was conducted by a third party on the vehicle. And some evidence that was presented in a justice of the peace court action to conduct such a lien sale was provided to the court, but no evidence was introduced showing that the sale was actually conducted. So basically they're saying, hey, this car was sold to somebody else with this other thing that happened, basically a garage keeper sale. So, you know, I don't know why somebody would buy it without having clear title to it or whatever, but they don't really go into that in the court case, but they talk about some other things. So the plaintiff basically said that they were entitled to summary judgment for the total balance due on the contract since they had sold it to somebody else, essentially, basically since it was gone there and their security interest was voided. And what the defendant said that they did default on the contract, they said that basically they failed to mitigate their damages by failing to repossess the vehicle to offset the amounts due to it. And that was their whole legal defense, is like, hey, you had every right to come get it. You didn't do it, so you failed to mitigate your damages for it.
I would agree with them.
And so that was what they had said. Well, the court might not have agreed to it with you, though.
Oh.
It says in the decision portion of this opinion that the issue before the court is a simple one. Is a creditor entitled to recover the full balance due on a car loan where, one, the buyer bought the car and defaulted on the car loan, two, pursuant to a loan agreement that provides that the creditor may repossess the car, and three, the creditor has failed to pursue such repossession? The court concludes the answer is yes. Basically, it was their opinion that the plaintiff may be able to pursue multiple remedies, either individually or simultaneously, and it chose to seek a judgment against one of the buyers in the contract to settle a civil debt collection action. And basically, it was able to use either one. So, you know, even though they didn't exercise that option to repossess it, they could sue them for the balance due. So that kind of goes to the whole theory of mitigation a little bit and talks a bit about a money damage versus repossession. So,
well, if somebody hid the car or sold the car or destroyed the car, something like that, then, yeah, you're still entitled to the money.
Yeah.
Whatever is left owed on the vehicle.
Right.
So just because you can't get the car. But I'm just saying that if you serve the proper papers and the people were in default and they basically abandoned the car and you didn't go get it, I don't know. You haven't, as the bank, you didn't do your duty in mitigating the loss.
Now, I think the difference comes in is if they do take possession of it and then they don't mitigate their damages. Yes, I agree with you. But the simple fact is that if you just say, throw your hands up and be like, eh, I don't want this car anymore. Come take it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe, like you said, the bank's not in the business of selling cars and maintaining cars. Maybe they don't want to repossess it. You know, they're about money. So the person who bought the car can't turn it around in the bank and make it their obligation to come repossess it and take that car, is my opinion.
Well, all I know is I would have been out there to get it because I had that show. There were times where people called me and said, I'm not going to be able to pay for this car. You can come get it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that happened. But one of the things I know that you're responsible for when you do take possession of a car,
mm-hmm.
we always, whenever we brought one in, the first thing we did is two of us went down together and we inventoried everything in the car.
Yeah.
That was to protect us in case somebody said, I had my gold coin collection in the trunk and
yeah.
you all must have taken it or something. So two of us would go down there together and we would inventory everything in the car and then we would sign off on that this is what we found in there.
Yeah, that's probably a pretty good policy too. That way somebody can't come back and try to sue you for it. But I mean, I would say that honestly, I mean, it's probably a bit of a gray area as far as whose property is in there. Well, I guess if it's not something that's attached to the car, like an improvement or things like that, like you can't say, well, that was my tires on there.
Well, here's a few examples of some things that I encountered doing that. One of them, there was a doctor that we had the loan on their vehicle, and they were consistently falling behind. Then they'd catch it up, falling behind, catch it up. Well, at one particular time, they were behind about 4 months in their payment. We'd send them the letter, the right to cure default, no response. The time had gone past. Well, I went to the hospital where I knew this doctor worked, and so I went to the employee lots, finding the employee lots under the building. They were actually inside, in the parking areas, and I'd walk in there, and I found the car. So I went back to the bank, and I had another person drive me down there. So you're able to, if the car is bought new and we have the title to it, we could go to these car dealerships, get their key numbers, or call them and get the key numbers and have a key made to the car.
Yeah.
So that we didn't have to break in or anything. So I got the keys made for the car. I had somebody drop me off there. I walked into the lot, got in the car, and drove it up to the gate to get out. Well, heck, there's a gate there blocking me. You have to have a card or something to get in. So I'm desperately looking around over the visor and in the glove compartment. Well, I find the card in the glove compartment at the same time that I find the card so I can get out of the parking garage. A thing falls out, and it's the four coupons for the payments with a check for the amount made out that's sitting in the glove compartment. So at that point, I'm faced with, I've got possession of the car. I'm trying to get out of the garage, but there's a check. Well, I can't take the check and the coupons and say, there we go, we're all even. So my only choice was to go ahead and leave and take the car back to the bank. And so I get back, and so that's one of the things we inventoried and made note of, that a check for the payments were in there.
What did you do with that situation?
Well, of course, the doctor called in and said, they've just been busy. They hadn't had a chance. And for me, I got the car. I've done my job. I think we keep it and sell it. Well, the vice president had a different opinion. The doctor said, yes, take that check and pay my account up to date and let me continue paying for my car. I'll be down to get it. And I'm like, I already got it. Don't give it back. And he's like, no, we're going to give it back because we're not in the business of selling cars.
Yeah.
So they gave it back. Now, one other one that I did, this was a case like I referred to earlier where this guy had taken, I don't even know why this guy defaulted. He only owed like $700. And this was a Volkswagen Rabbit that was about 10 years old and had about 200,000 miles on it.
Yeah.
But the guy had skipped out of town with his car. And of course, I'm not going to drive around the country trying to find him.
Yeah.
But I did know where his parents lived. So about once a month, I'd go down and make a trip, circle the block, see if I saw that Volkswagen Rabbit. Well, one day, out of the blue, I'm driving along, doing my usual reconnaissance, and I drive by there not expecting to find anything. Oh, crap! There it is! There's the Volkswagen Rabbit! We've got it! And now, he hadn't bought this one new, so I couldn't get keys made, but I could get a tow truck.
Yeah.
So I got the proper paperwork from the bank, called a tow truck. We went down and towed the thing and took it in. I'm like, yes, this is one of those cold cases that everybody else had given up on. And I got it. I got this Volkswagen Rabbit that's 10 years old with 200,000 miles on it. And it was $700. But I got it. And I'm all excited. So we tow it in. This was like on a Friday. So we tow it in and we put it under the bank. That's where we had a parking garage under the bank. So we have it parked under there. And so I had to work that next Saturday morning. So I come in Saturday morning and I go down there to look, check on my prize. It's gone. He stole it back from us. He brought the keys and came to the bank and took the car back from us.
Oh, wow.
So I called his parents in Monday morning and I said, I can't remember the guy's name. Of course, I wouldn't say it if I did.
Yeah.
But, for the sake of argument, Luther, I called the parents up and I said, look, we legally took possession of Luther's car. That was our right because he defaulted on his loan. Now, the car disappeared from here last night. I'm assuming Luther took it. Now, I'm not accusing him or anything, but at this point, it's a police matter because once we took possession of it, that was our car. So we have to report that as a stolen auto now.
Yeah.
Now, if this were to turn back up at the bank before the end of the week, we might be able to stop anything from happening. But if not, I'm afraid we're going to have to let the police handle it. Well, of course, the parents wouldn't admit anything one way or another.
Yeah.
But mysteriously, the car showed up the next night, where the next morning when I came in, here was the car sitting back where it was parked. But it was minus one thing. We had noticed when we had brought the car in, we did the inventory, it had a brand new battery in the car. When it was parked there the next day, when we looked, the battery was gone. So I guess it's like you said, those are my tires. Well, I think this guy just put a new battery in the thing. He's like, my God, they're going to take the car, but I'm going to take my battery back I just put in it. So he took his battery back.
That's funny.
I don't know what you're going to do with the battery. You know, your car's gone. But anyway, he took his, by God, battery back. So we didn't make a deal out of it. We just decided we put another battery in it and hoped that we could get $700 out of that rabbit.
And whatever happened to that rabbit?
We ended up selling it.
Did you?
Yeah. I mean, we hold an auction is what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And we held an auction and sold it. And I don't think we got the $700 out of it, but... you know, it was enough where we didn't worry about it after that. There was very few that, you know, that we sold the car and said, now you owe us $5,000 or something like that. Usually whatever we got from the car, we left it at that because if the guy couldn't pay for the car, what good was it going to do to sue him?
Yeah, so he didn't go after like some sort of, what we call like a deficiency type judgment or anything
right.
like that.
Yeah, so we didn't do that.
Now,
so.
Did the bank vice president call you in the office and said, good job, Smurl. You really got us that one. He's $700.
Yeah, I know. It wasn't so much the money
as the principle
that had been out there. I mean, since before I was the collection manager, that had been one they couldn't get, and I figured out a way to get it.
I always like when people come into my office and somebody owes them money or something, and it's not a lot of money, and I'm like, well, it's not about that. It's about the principal.
Well, like, here's what's going to cost you for your principals.
Well, no, but the thing is, they're like, well, I think you should do this for free and take it on a contingency basis. I'm like, so you want me to put all this work in, sue this guy over $500, and you want me to take a third of that, what's going to cost me 20 or 30 hours of my time?
Yeah.
No, I don't think so. No, it's not my principle.
That's right. Principles are fine, but they don't keep the lights on.
Yeah. You'd be surprised. There are people that come in and they tell you the story and they think you should do it on principle. I'm like, well, I appreciate your principle, and I think you are right, but that's not my fight, not my dog, not my whatever colloquialism you want to use there. I ain't taking your case.
The one I think that was the most exciting for me is we had one that we were trying to find the guy, and he had gotten, I don't know whether laid off or fired from his job here locally,
mm-hmm.
and ended up he moved out of state to find another job. Well, he let all his payments lapse in between. He didn't tell us where he moved. He made no kind of arrangement. So after sending all the proper paperwork, we started trying to locate the car. Well, finally, I don't remember how we got the information, but we found out he was in Nashville, Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
And so we contacted a repo agency there. Now, they weren't a bank. They were a repo agency. And they actually tracked this guy down and tracked the car down and told us where the car would be, that this guy was working here and appeared to be there Monday through Friday, 8 to 5 or whatever it was.
Yeah.
So the car was available, and they said, do you want us to repossess it for you? And of course, we are paying them to do that. So the more you have them do, the more you're going to lose out on it because you're paying them to do that.
Right.
So they said, no, just, so what we ended up doing, they bought me a plane ticket to fly from Huntington to Nashville. This guy from the repo agency met me at the airport. He drove me to where the car was parked at this place because I made sure I got there in the middle of the day. So he drove me to this company that the guy worked for. I already had keys because he had bought it new. This was a brand new, like, I can't remember. It was like a brand new Charger or Challenger. It was a sports car type thing. Black.
Oh, wow.
With red stripes. And I mean, it was a sporty, it was a hopped up vehicle.
Yeah.
And it was only about a year old. So it was still in good shape and everything. So he drives me there. I gave him a check for their services. They had told us ahead of time what it would cost. So I gave him a check for his services, and I got in the car and drove that thing from Nashville back to Huntington. Now, one of the things you always made sure you did, and they did it for us because they had the local contacts, is they called the police and said, this car may be reported stolen, but it was actually a legal repossession. So if you get a call, you can tell the people. You tell the guy that calls to report his car stolen that it was actually a legal repo so that I don't get into some kind of trouble getting pulled over somewhere in between here and there.
Yeah, no kidding.
So I drove back and I'm thinking, oh, wait, man, I'm like
Steve McQueen.
Steve McQueen, that's what I was thinking. I'm like Steve McQueen there driving back home with his car. It was great.
Don't call me Tommy Smurl anymore. Just call me Bullet.
That's right. That's what I felt like exactly. Steve McQueen. And you couldn't help but speed and something like that, you know?
Yeah, that's awesome. Now, I know some of these, I think they're like generally the buy here, pay here, like used car lots you see a lot of times. And I know I came across this in Florida. They'll actually install GPS tracking devices in the cars now. where basically they know exactly where those cars are at all times.
Well, I don't blame them, but in 81, we didn't have those.
Well, I think what they do is, I think they make it a business of selling people these cars at high interest rates for way more than what they're supposed to.
And they're expecting them to default.
Yeah, the people have bad credit, so they're kind of almost taking advantage of that situation. Mm-hmm. And what they do is they repossess it, take, you know, GPS, take it back, and then they're on the hook. They're like, whoa, we'll sell you another car. They just basically make them indentured servants to them, paying them for these cars.
Exactly.
So
it's like giving them company script. They have to buy from the company store.
It's a similar thing. And it's kind of a shadier aspect of that, I think.
Renter center.
Yeah. Yeah. Very similar. Well, I mean, that's also too, those renter centers where you buy like a TV from them, you pay a lot more for it.
Sure.
You get it right now, but they actually
keep only $25 a week.
Yeah. But now they keep a security interest in that. So if you don't make a payment on it, they'll come take it.
Right.
Which is different than like, so like a unsecured debt. So like if you have a credit card and you buy that same TV at like a Best Buy or something
they can't come get your TV.
No, they don't have a security
interest. They can just sue you.
Yeah. And that's the difference between secured debt and unsecured debt and collateral, which we could probably do a full episode talking about that, because there's all kinds of different things with the UCC, the Uniform Commercial Code, where you file financing statements on different kinds of property with the Secretary of State to put people on notice that you have a security interest on things. So yeah, that's kind of a different thing there. So whenever you think about repossession, pleven, things like that, it's generally they have a security interest in that item. Oh, one more thing. I had a case actually in Florida where somebody found a GPS device in their car they had bought. There was no mention of it anywhere in the contract. So basically this used car lot had a GPS in someone's car and did not tell them. It was pretty shady.
Well, but what does that fall under? I mean, if it's not the government, so it's not illegal search and seizure. So what is it?
Well, I told them they could just take it out.
Well, sure, you can tell them to take it out. But I mean, they have no recourse, though, do they?
No. They was like, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
It's like they're not supposed to be in there to begin with.
Right.
So, you know, I just think that was like super shady, though, to like not even disclose to them that there was a GPS device in their car.
Well, they must have known what kind of clientele they normally deal with.
Yeah, but still, like, you got to tell the person that, because that's, I don't know, I'd be mad about that. So, all right, well, that's going to bring us to
Legal Briefs.
So Legal Briefs is a part of the show where we go over some different terms that we talked about, and we got a lot of fun terms in this one.
All right.
The first one is mitigate.
Mitigate means to reduce the amount of loss in what you have in a loan. Like, in other words, you want to make sure you take good care of the car and sell it for as much as you can so that you don't leave the other guy exposed to pay for it. You have to put forth your best efforts.
Yeah, it's like an equitable type defense, and it's basically protects the party from kind of really getting screwed over, like somebody taking advantage of the situation and really gouging them for extra.
Right, like if you repossessed a car and the car was still relatively new, low mileage and all this kind of stuff, and you turned around and sold it to somebody for $1,000 when it was like Blue Book value $10,000, you couldn't then turn around to the guy and say, now you got to pay the difference. You have to have sold that car for a reasonable amount unless you can show why it was in such bad shape you couldn't.
Yeah, exactly. And you might see, like, for example, like if you you've repossessed that Rabbit,
right?
And you say, like, tell a family member, hey, I got this Volkswagen Rabbit, only 200,000 miles.
Yeah.
It's worth $700 or whatever. I'll sell it to you for $100.
Right.
And then you try to sue the guy for the other $600.
Yeah.
You know, that's not cool. That's shady.
Right.
So, security interest.
Security interest is like the car or any other type of collateral that you would put up for in exchange for a loan.
Yep, that's it exactly. And the difference being is that, like, credit cards are generally unsecured, meaning that there's no collateral or anything for it. Now, you can have different contracts, too, where there might be some sort of collateral that's completely unrelated to whatever you're purchasing, but you're just putting that as collateral. You're giving them a security interest in something else to secure a different kind of loan. For example, like, say if I got a line of credit for my business or something like that, and the bank said, well, you know, we're going to need you to give us a security interest in something so you can basically get this line of credit for your business. And it's like, well, you can take a security interest in my house.
Right.
So it wouldn't be a mortgage, but they have a security interest in my house to secure the loan for my business.
Right.
So that would be a different kind of security interest. But basically, a security interest is something that secures a loan or a debt. And in this case, with repossession, it's usually the vehicle. With foreclosures, it's the mortgage, it's the house, things like that. Accelerate.
Accelerate. That's
that is what you did in the Charger all the way from Nashville.
Yeah, I accelerated like hell, yeah. But I assume you're talking about accelerate in terms of if you were to go default on your loan or get behind in your payments and the bank or the lending agency has the right to accelerate the loan to where you owe the full balance instead of just the monthly payments.
Absolutely, yeah. And that's going to be a clause that's generally in the contract, and it'll be called an acceleration clause.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And the last term is replevin.
I knew replevin was going to show up.
It's such a fun word.
Yeah, that's the right to be able to go take the stuff back that's secured there, isn't it?
It is, but replevin in common terminology now refers to the court actions. Basically, you go get a court order to take back the property.
Oh, instead of doing it yourself.
Yeah, but it kind of goes hand in hand with repossession, but you might do it if you don't know where it is or if the person's playing games with you or things like that. Basically, you get a court order saying that they need to give it back to you. And then if they don't follow the court order, they could be in contempt of court. And then contempt of court, it could be punishable by jail or things like that. So It's just basically getting the courts involved to get your property back. We could actually do probably a whole episode on replevin. It's got a long history in common law dating back to like 1100.
That would be interesting. Maybe we might come across another Lodowick story.
Would it?
Yeah, those are always good just because of the names.
That is true. There are some great names. We don't have as good of names as we used to anymore.
The one that I gotta tell this was the one where, you know, I told you that I was young and aggressive then and going after it, and all that mattered was capturing the prize.
Yeah.
There was one time though I almost let that get the best of me.
Oh yeah.
To where it almost ended with my own demise. I felt. There was a case, and I hope this doesn't sound bad. It just is what it is, where I was going to get a guy's car, and a guy was, he'd been on and off the delinquent list for a long time. And
yeah.
He'd finally fallen about, I don't know, five payments behind.
Yeah, pretty substantial amount.
Yeah, I guess it was about six payments, and it was about $200 a payment. You have to remember, this was the 80s, early 80s. So it was about $200 a payment. So he owed us about $1,200. And I'd gone through the paperwork and everything. Well, I drove to his house one day. It happened to be a Friday evening. And I drove to his house. His wife was there. And I said, I'm here to take Russell's Cadillac. I got to take it back in. He hadn't made his payments. She said, if I let you take the car, because the car was actually there at the house. She said, if I let you take that car, Russell will kill me when he gets home. She said, can you at least talk to him about it? And I said, well, yeah, I guess. I said, is he here? No. I said, well, where is he? Well, if you follow me, I'll take you to him. I didn't ask where we were going or anything. And this was over in Ohio. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't ask where we were going or where he was or anything. I just wanted to get the car.
Yeah.
So she hops in the Cadillac, drives, and I follow her. We go down. I'm following her. Drive. Where are we going? Where are we going? We're driving back to Huntington. So we come back to Huntington. I'm following her. We're going downtown. I was like, where are we going? I'm thinking he's at another house or something, or is it work or something? She pulls up outside of a bar downtown called Soul Swingers. And I pull up behind her, and I'm thinking, oh, no. And so she gets out of the car and says, Russell's in there. And I said, were you going to go in and get him and bring him out? She said, I'm not going in that place. So here I am. 21, 22 years old in my three-piece light blue brushed denim suit with my platform heels that I was styling, see?
Oh, my gosh.
And I go walking in Soul Swingers on this Friday evening, and as I turn around, as I walk in the door, I look, and there goes that Cadillac pulling off. She left the scene.
Yeah.
And she's in the Cadillac. Well, by then, I'm walking in the door. Well, I walked in the door, and I'm assuming you've seen Animal House multiple times.
Oh, many, many times.
You remember when the frat guys go on their road trip, and they walk in that bar because their buddy Otis Day and the Nights is playing there?
Yeah.
And so they walk in, and the music stops, and everybody stops, and they all look around at them. That was me in my three-piece light blue brushed denim suit. Everything stopped, and they looked around. And, I mean, I was the only white person in the bar.
Yeah.
So I look around, I see Russell standing at the bar, and he's there with his entourage. And so I had no choice at that point. I had to do something. It was either turn around and run or go up and do the best I could. So I walked up to him, and I was like, Russell, he knew who I was. And he was like, yes, Mr. Smurl. And I said, I'm here because you're past due on your Cadillac payments, and I got to take possession of your car. And he's like, how much would it cost to hold me over till Monday? And I said, well, you owe $1,200 right now. He reached in his pocket and pulled out a wad of, as far as I could tell, it was all $100 bills. He peeled off six $100 bills and handed them to me and said, will that hold me till Monday? I said, we're good, Russell. Thanks. See you Monday. Headed out the door. I figured, all in all, it was a pretty good night. I was still alive, and I had part of the money back for the car, and so I was headed back to the bank. Now, of course, I never saw him Monday,
yeah.
But I knew to never let somebody lead me to somewhere to go collect the debt from then on. Not all debts are worth it, and aggressiveness can get you in trouble.
Yeah, that sounds like a... You were out of your element a little bit there.
Very much. But, you know, here's the thing, too. He also, I mean, I could have stuck that $600 in my pocket and said, nah, I never saw Russell.
Yeah.
I don't know what he's talking about. So he had a little bit of trust giving that to me that I was going to do the right thing with it, too.
Well,
so.
I mean, if you see somebody in a three-piece brushed denim suit with platform.
Light blue
denim suit
with my platform heels.
Yeah. You could probably trust them.
I wasn't going to outrun anybody in those platform heels. I'll tell you that.
That's funny. Well, I hope everybody enjoyed the repossession story, since we had some firsthand knowledge on this one.
Well, I haven't relived those stories in a long time. It used to be I did a regular bit reviewing all my repo stories, and there's still more from where that came from, but I think that's enough for this episode.
Repo stories, part two.
Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Doctor, Lawyer, Indian Chief.
And thanks to the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for the use of their recording studio. Their podcasts include Mabim Bam, Sawbones, and Still Buffering, as well as many other fine offerings. And please, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you liked us. If you didn't, well then, not so much.
You're not supposed to say that.
You always edit that out though, right?
Usually. Good. This has been Court Appointed. I'm Mike Meadows, your co-host. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurf, and I am...